In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Sundress, back from the New York Comic Con and loaded with a number of great interviews that we got on the floor. You're going to hear talks with Frank Quitely talking about Batman and Robin and the upcoming Multiplicity from DC Comics. Chris Burnham talks Batman Leviathan. Matt Wagner is here to talk about his new project with Simon Bisley for Legendary Comics. Mahmoud Asrad gives us an update on Supergirl. Shane Davis joins us to talk about Superman Earth 1 Volume 2. We get an update on that project with J. Michael Straczynski. Gabe Hardman comes on to talk about Betrayal of Planet of the Apes and his latest Marvel announcement. Tom Fowler is here with Tom King to talk about a new novel that they're producing for Simon & Schuster. Fred Van Lente and Ryan Dunleavy are here to talk about the wrap-up to Comic Book Comics and some other projects on the horizon. Brent Schoonover talks Mr. Murder is Dead and the final continuation of Astronaut Dad. And we'll also talk to John and Matt Ricchetti. John was a storyboard artist for the Venture Brothers, and Matt and John produced a great comic called Growing Up Comics. And finally, we wrap things up with editor Dave Elliott from Image Comics, who you know from such works as The Vault, Marksman, Red Spike, and that DeviantArt issue of Heavy Metal that came out this year. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com. It's my favorite online store, and make it yours because you will find a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, essentials, original graphic novels, all at reduced prices off the standard retail price, sometimes as much as 75% off the standard retail price. It's easy to find books from your favorite writers and artists at InStockTrades.com. All you have to do is search their database and you'll find the right book for you. And don't forget, orders of $50 or more receive free shipping. For all the details, check it out, InStockTrades.com.
This is good. I get to do dueling Batman artists, the men who work with Grant Morrison. I got Frank Quitely here and I've got Chris Burnham. And Chris is doing commerce, so I'll take a moment with Frank right now. It's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, thanks. Pleasure to meet you, too.
Obviously, wonderful run on Batman and Robin.
Well, thanks very much. I had originally been slated for the first three and the last three. And catching the deadline for the third one, my sciatica problem came back.
Oh, wow.
And I was, like, 3 months off work completely, and then, like, 6 months just working really slowly, you know, or working, you know, with,
sure,
you know, like 5 minutes and then taking a 5 minute break, you know, that kind of thing.
Wow.
It was really bad. So back to full health now, but obviously the disappointment was that I didn't get to do the Joker. Can you do?
Yeah, well, you know, honestly, what I loved, especially in the early issues and especially that first issue, the weight of the world on Dick Grayson's shoulders in that one, you know, panel.
I
just thought really kind of encapsulated the character at that moment and everything. You really felt the anguish that he was going through and that weight of being Batman.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, he had a job in his hands. He wasn't just filling in for Batman, which is an impossibly big shoes to fill, but he was also had the whole Damien problem as well, and Damien had absolutely no respect for him. And, you know, they're cool stories, you know, and I'm sure Chris would agree. We're kind of, to some extent, you know, we're at the mercy of what kind of scripts we end up working on.
Sure.
You can always do your best work, but it is noticeable that despite the fact that I always try and do my best work no matter who I'm working with, it's always with the better scripts. You know, that's when people come back and say, that really moved me, or that, you know, and you're probably the same, you know.
Yeah.
Like, working with Grant is, you know, it's a treat.
Absolutely, yeah. Chris, you know, have you guys had a chance to compare notes?
Yeah, a little bit. We just met last night for the first time, and I think we hit it off pretty well. But yeah, I mean, the comic that people have responded to the most my whole career was the Batman Inc. number 7 with on the Indian Reservation.
Absolutely.
And I mean, I did a really good job drawing it, I think, but it's not, I didn't do a better job drawing it than issue 4 or 6, but for whatever reason, the emotional resonance, I guess, art seem better because you're so much more invested in it, so you're not just casually flipping through it, you're, you know, pouring yourself into it, so, you know, whatever effort I put into the drawings, you know, pays off more for the reader that way.
How's it been creating certain characters for both of your runs? I mean, like Professor Pig, I mean, you know, wasn't that one of your guys, obviously?
Yeah. it was brilliant, because, like, when Grant started talking about it, he's like, we're going to have this these kind of circus freaks, and, you know, they'll be like, and he started describing them, and they were, it was all just the sort of shit that I would draw in my sketchbook anyway. It was really, yeah, it was one of those occasions where something comes along that really feels like it fits right, you know.
Chris, have you created any characters yet for Batman Incorporated?
Well, I did the initial version of Batwing, which I'm not sure how successful that was. I like the new, I like the redesign a lot more. And I redesigned Cassandra Cain as the Black Bat. I like that a lot. So that was interesting, you know, taking Grant's notes and, you know, spinning off and trying to come up with something cool. But I haven't really, I'm trying to think, I haven't really created a major character, like, out of full cloth, really.
Chris has to deal with Grant from a transatlantic point and different time zones and stuff. You guys live really close, don't you?
We live fairly close. Well, Grant actually spends about half the year in L.A. Okay. So, we live fairly close, but... obviously I can usually, like...
Do you guys get together and talk, or is it mostly on the phone, or...?
Yeah, well, normally when we start a new project, we always get together and talk about it at that stage, and then after that, usually just, you know, like, I send an email.
Sure.
And Kristen, his wife, gets back to me and tells me what his answer was, you know, but...
Grant's not too tech-savvy, huh?
The thing is, though, you know, like... People always say, what did he do before he, you know, like, before he got married? And what he did was he just didn't answer the phone. I won't name names, but I've heard various stories, not just from Grant, but from the editors themselves, about, like, working on projects for quite some time, and Grant just wouldn't answer the phone to them. Because he's working and he's not interested in answering the phone. You're like, come on, you know. Anyway.
Well, I know he's reached a good level of relationship with Chris, but I know he adores you. I mean, he always talks you up at the panels and stuff. I was in San Diego and had some great stories.
Yeah, well, we just, you know, like, we really like working with each other, you know. I've never worked on anything with Grant that's felt kind of like by the numbers. Everything's always... Oh, yeah. The new X-Men stuff, the scripts were fantastic. Obviously, I don't feel quite as close to that because it wasn't like a single like project the way like All-Star Superman or V3 were. Like, it was just the two of us, start to finish. But, you know, it's also fun, both on new X-Men and on Batman and Robin, when you're working with other artists, you know, and like... Somebody else is drawing this bit first, so you've got to follow their lead, and oh, you know, all that kind of thing. So, yeah.
So with Leviathan coming up, how's the work? I know. Let's actually go with what's coming up, and then to next year. And obviously, tell me what you guys can tell me. There's still, is it a double issue that's coming out of Batman Incorporated?
I believe so. The plans on that, and what we're talking about is what was originally going to be issues 9 and 10 of Batman Incorporated. Issue 9 was Cameron Stewart's issue, and issue 10 is mine. And the format that's going to be released in, I'm not quite sure of, to be honest. But it is nearly done. It is totally awesome. It is by far the Grant Morrison-iest thing I've ever done. So I'm getting to do one of the Granty ones. It's pretty crazy.
Excellent. And then are you working with Grant on Leviathan? Or because I forget what you guys might be working on in the future.
No, I'm doing one of Grant's Multiversity books.
There we go. Okay, yeah. It was Multiversity. Okay.
Pax Americana. That's the Charlton characters.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Awesome, man.
So far, I've only got 8 pages of script so far.
Okay.
And they're thumbnailed, and I've started penciling, so...
Wonderful.
It's up and running. It's on its way.
I can't wait to see the designs you're going to come up with the Charlton characters. I'm sure they're going to be pretty interesting.
We'll see.
Fair enough, man. When, as I said before we started recording, I'd love to get you on for a longer word balloon. It'd be a pleasure to talk to you, man. So very cool.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Awesome. Yep. Well, yeah, I'm not going to keep you guys. I know you guys have got a usual busy con schedule. And Burnham's got a line going. So there we go. I'll tell you, this is awesome. It's like a Batman trifecta because Matt Wagner just walked up.
All right, brother. How you doing?
Good to see you, man.
Good love connection right now.
I gave up on trying to connect to you, but oh well.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's
happenstance.
And Wagner's got something coming up with Legendary Comics.
I do.
And that's cool. Did they announce it this weekend? I know there was
a panel
tonight.
They announced it in San Diego. We just finished talking about it at the panel. Yep. It's a new series called The Tower Chronicles.
Awesome.
I'm writing. Simon Bisley's drawing.
Wow. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yep.
That's cool. All right, and I just so quietly, when we're closer and everything, that we'll do a longer conversation, and now that your thing's announced, when are they looking for first issue?
He starts drawing in November 1st, so it's going to be...
March issue, maybe? Or?
Ultimately, it's 3 graphic novels, but they're broken up into 64-page prestige issues.
Outstanding.
So, I don't know how... and I've never really worked with Simon on a narrative sense, so I don't know how long he takes to do stuff. So
that's cool. I'm a patient man, Matt.
I'm almost done, finished writing the third of those four. So
awesome. That's great. Well, all right, well, I'm going to let these guys have a private conversation and say, looking forward to our talk, looking forward to our talk, and Burnham, looking forward to our talk. So thank you for making the love connection. I appreciate that.
Yeah, my pleasure, buddy.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Excellent. I just had Gabe Hardman and Karina Becko on for some Ape Talk because the trail of the Planet of the Apes is coming up from Boom Studios. It's the first week in November?
Yes, November 2nd.
Outstanding, and it's good to see you, my man. And I understand that there was new Marvel news in terms of your next project, so tell us what's going on.
Yeah, today they announced that Rick Remender and I are going to take over Secret Avengers.
That's outstanding.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm just getting started on it, just drawing the first issue now, so I'm like finding my way through it. Hawkeye is replacing Steve Rogers as the captain, or you know, as the team leader, and some Captain Britain, and a couple other new characters along with Beast and Valkyrie, and Black Widow, who'd previously been on the team.
That's excellent. And, obviously Agents of Atlas kind of always had that kind of cross between espionage and superheroes as well.
Yeah, and, and this is going to have a whole sort of epic, crazy sci-fi angle to it with the new Adaptoids and a much bigger development of, it'll basically turn into a version of the Sentinels for the Avengers.
That's very interesting. And that totally makes sense, obviously, the history of the Super Adaptoid. That's fantastic.
Yeah, there's a whole lot more to it that I'm sure that Rick could go on at length about, and me not as well, but,
That's really cool, man. Parker obviously has his crazy sensibilities, and Rick certainly has his crazy bent as well, so that's going to be fun. How much have you had much contact with Rick in the past?
Yeah. Well, I mean, in the past, we had we worked together briefly on Dr. Voodoo. I had drawn some backup stuff.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Of course you did.
And so,
it was awesome. Go on.
So, that's basically as much as we really knew from each other, and I met him once at a con or something. But, when the project came up and it was with Rick, that sounded right. It sounded like a group of characters that were right, a project that would fit with me while being different enough from the last thing that, I always want to do something different. I want to be challenged. I want to, not keep doing the same thing. So, hopefully this will be interesting enough and different enough, but still somewhat, familiar sensibilities.
Awesome. And had the opportunity now to going beyond the cover and some character designs I saw on Betrayal of the Planet of the Apes. I'm here at the show and I'm able to really see some pages firsthand. And no lie, man, and I'm happy to say this on the record, it's the best Planet of the Apes stuff I've seen since the black and white stuff from the 70s. And no lie, absolutely no hyperbole at all.
Well, thank you very much. I kind of wish we could do a black and white book. But actually, Jordi Belair doing the colors is doing such an amazing job that, it's going to look fantastic.
So. Awesome, man. No, the designs are great. And people are really going to appreciate the attention to detail I think you have, where you really are back in that world of the first five movies, and especially really it being a prequel and everything, the world of the first film.
Yeah.
So.
No, absolutely. That's the idea. I want it to feel authentic, and I feel like I'm the guy who knows what authentic is for Planet of the Apes.
I can hear Maurice Evans' words coming out of his mouth. Who would you have cast as your lead character, this general, this rogue general?
In a perfect world, Lee Marvin. I mean, there's no question it would be Lee Marvin.
Speaking of Lee Marvin, I'm sure you had that same reaction when it's like, oh, they're remaking Steel and they're doing it this way. But I guess the reviews have been very positive.
Yeah,
we're both like the film snobs. It's like, all right, maybe it's good. Maybe I'll watch it on cable.
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'll see it later. I just find it incredibly difficult to believe. I mean, I got a call to work on that movie and I didn't do it. Yeah. But, it's just, I don't know.
From a design standpoint, that almost sounds like it might be a fun project and stuff. So, yeah, I understand. And I appreciate your choices.
It could be, it could be. But I just didn't, I don't know. It sounded like something that could go wrong.
Sure.
Mostly, And if it's great, great. And like everything, I'm more than happy to see a movie that turned out to be good that I didn't work on,
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. No, and I can appreciate that as well. Well, you always, you've picked a lot of winners lately and stuff. So, keep the streak alive, my man.
Yeah.
And I'm so glad that you've really been able to find this balance with your film work. We did say, and all we can say, is that you worked on the current Batman that's in production.
Yes.
And obviously, for people who maybe don't remember or first-time listeners, you know, you've worked on Spider-Man 3, Superman Returns. So you've been able to. I appreciate.
Inception.
And of course, the greatest film of that group.
Of all time.
Well,
no.
You know. And did you work on the other two Batman?
No, I did not. The first time I worked with Nolan was on Inception. So they produced the first two movies primarily out of England, and they'd use British guys for most of that stuff.
Okay.
But he'd been prepping the stuff more in LA, and that's why they came to me. You know,
awesome. Well, you know, interesting filmmakers, interesting comic writers. So I'm glad Gabe Hartman is working with talented people, and the result is good content that we can enjoy on the screen, or we can enjoy them between the pages. So, congratulations on Secret Avengers, and looking forward to Betrayal of Planet of the Apes.
Awesome, thanks, John.
I'm very happy to finally get a couple minutes with Mahmoud Aswar, because it's great to see you, and you're always very kind to me. And it's a mutual admiration society, because I enjoy your work as well. So very good to see you. Are you enjoying Supergirl?
Absolutely. It was something I was looking forward to. The next thing in my career, I wanted to do a single character book, especially a female character. And I'm absolutely loving that it's a DC character. So it's a blast.
That's fantastic. And for a second, I'm blanking on the writer. Who's your writer right now?
I have Mike Johnson and Michael Green.
Yes, excellent.
Double writers.
Yeah. That first issue was really great, and seeing, you know, Kara kind of experiencing Earth for the first time, and a stranger in a strange world.
Yep. Yeah, we'll have some exciting stuff for you, and lots of action going on, and lots of things about Krypton, and how Carol, how her life is going on. It will be fun.
That's great. You've been a very good fit at DC. I really enjoyed your Adam story with Jeff Lemire.
Thanks a lot. That was a really blast. You know, Jeff is a great writer. I think it was his first superhero comic. So it was a real pleasure working with him.
Now you know, I know you work in Istanbul, and Yildre is a friend of yours as well. Your usual table mate at these shows. Do you ever want to come here and live full time?
Well, it has been a thought, but I guess we'll move to Europe with my wife next year. That's the plan. So I guess
that's cool.
I'll leave that for later then.
What does your wife do for a living?
She's a graphic artist, but she's not working right now. Yeah.
You've got a sketchbook here.
The Apocalypse Survivors Field Guide. It's just a title. It includes my sketch.
Oh, so that's your sketchbook.
Yep.
Very, very cool.
Cool.
Excellent, man. No, you're doing terrific stuff, man. And I, like I said, I'm really glad to see that you're fitting in so well over at DC. Did you? Was there a lot of thought in terms of redesigning Supergirl? Was that your design, or was that design handed to you?
The design was actually Jim Lee's design. I only tweaked it a bit, but we actually tried some designs of my own and stuff. But in the end, we went with Jim Lee's design for it. Yeah.
Did you read any of the previous Supergirl stuff?
On and off. I do read a lot of comics, but I haven't read too much Supergirl in the past. I've read the Peter David stuff, especially, and some of the recent stuff, the Sterling Gates and stuff, and they were great. Really loved them.
That's cool. And are there other DC characters that you want to get a crack at? Are we going to see other? Yeah, I mean, you know, we see Superman, obviously, and I'm sure that's going to be an interesting issue coming up.
Yeah, I don't know if I can tell any, but we'll have some coming up. Especially after issue 4 and onwards. It will be really cool.
Excellent, man. Well, that's great. Hey, keep it up. You're doing a great job, and it's really good seeing you. And seriously, I appreciate that you listen and you like the show. So
absolutely.
You've always been very kind to me, so I'm happy to have you on for a couple minutes. And if we can, we'll figure out the time difference, and we'll try and talk a little bit longer sometime on the phone.
Absolutely. I'd love that, and I'm really happy that we finally got a chance to talk.
Absolutely, man. So good seeing you, Mahmoud. Take care.
Thank you.
This has become a tradition, I think, at both the New York Comic Con and C2E2, because the timing has always been right. These great independent creators have been doing comic book comics, following up on their great work on Action Philosophers. Ryan Dunleavy, Fred Van Lente. Finally, issue 6 of Comic Book Comics will be out soon. It is called, as he shakes it, Comics of the Future. Outstanding. So, Ryan, I'll let you start and everything. Tell me about the book, and then we'll bug Fred.
Well, we try to wrap everything up into a pretty package where we talk about we talk about the birth of graphic novels, the rise of that as a dominant format. We talk about Japanese comics and how they've proliferated, and also the direct market and web comics, and like where things are heading in the future of comics commerce.
So speculative future here, Fred Van Lente?
Yeah, to a certain degree. I mean, we're not really making any predictions. We're just offering some suggestions as to what might be the best way to distribute comics in a digital world.
Excellent. I think I can imagine some great visual jokes potentially here, Ryan, for comics of the future. Where do we insert this?
Fred came up with some pretty good ones. I had to take a look to remember.
What's funny is Ryan just finished drawing this 2 days ago, and now he still can't remember anything.
It's all a blur. I can appreciate
it. It is all a blur. It came through. Yeah.
All right, well, I was going to say.
Guardians of Torrents is one of the highlights out there.
Guardians of Torrents, all right. Garden of Torrents. Oh, like BitTorrents. I'm with you now. I was thinking Dean Torrents, of course, of Jan and Dean.
Ah, of course.
Indeed. What was, as I always am curious, when you've done these various ages, what was something interesting that you discovered in your research, Fred, that you maybe didn't know about, you know, looking at this era? Or maybe this was more familiar territory, so it was kind of easier to do this issue.
Well, you know, in researching comics retailing, what was really interesting to me is how quickly the industry grew, the direct market did. I mean, it grew by double digits for 20 years, you know, until the mid-90s crash. The number of stores ballooning in such a short period of time from 30 when Seagate Distribution was founded.
Yeah, only 30.
Yeah, to 700 in the 70s and 3,000, then 10,000 when Image and Wizard were going at full gun. So that I thought was amazing. And the other interesting thing, of course, was that how close the rise of comics retailing was to the rise of digital piracy, in the sense that the comics retailing was invented to, because you didn't know which comics you were going to get at which drugstore or newsstand, because that's not how they distributed comics in those days. And so you had dependability, you know, you knew you were going to get your comic, you had reliability, and you had timeliness, in the sense that you could get your comic the day they came out. Unfortunately, you know, there's nothing more dependable than digital, right? And they go up so quickly, you know. And you add the aspect of free to it, then there's no downside. So piracy is going to be a difficult foe to defeat for the comics industry. Or I should say, rather than defeat, absorb into the industry in such a way that the creators benefit in a solid monetary way.
Very cool. The legal issue, was it out when we spoke in Chicago last? I can't remember.
Was it? I don't, maybe it wasn't.
Yeah.
Or it was coming out. It was one of the two, and that's what I don't remember.
It was out at that point.
Okay. Well, again, if we didn't cover it, I really enjoyed the specific cases you guys went over. You've got the proof here of issue 6, as you guys said. Ryan just finished it last week. How close are we to it hitting the streets?
Very soon, Ryan gets
before Halloween. It's gonna
oh, great!
The stores.
Outstanding, man. That's fantastic. So, and it's in the Diamond catalog, obviously.
Well, you've already ordered it. This is a comic that's very late.
I see.
Late, yeah.
No worries, we're a little late, folks. But the good news is it is coming out finally. So that's good. And you know, Chicago certainly, I know, supports comic book comics, and I'm really glad. And it was great to hear too yesterday from you, Fred, that you know, the collection has been picked up by a publisher?
Yeah, it has. I'm not sure I can say which one at the present time. The title of the book will probably change to The Comic Book History of Comics. It's something we were discussing offline before. Just because, as much as I love the title of Comic Book Comics, it can be a little obtuse.
Sure.
As to what the book is actually
you want to let people know. And that is the great thing about this series. It has been this wonderful history of comics that is done in a very entertaining way, and I know I say this every time you guys come on. Ryan, really funny stuff. Very, very clever. And Fred, really wonderful stories and insight on so many facets, really going back to the beginning. Just the curiosity of how the circle of publishers were all so close to each other. The interesting stories of comic, you know, the comic book creators when they went to war, the Bert Christensen stuff. Honestly, man, I love looking at Matt Wagner's Sandman Mystery Theater series, because he took all of those 10 stories that Bert Christensen did of the original Sandman and expanded them into 6-issue arcs and, you know, 60 issues of Sandman Mystery Theater, which is pretty incredible, man. So it is those kind of stories. And then we get into the more familiar territory of the Marvel Age. Roy Lichtenstein, doing, you know, the riffs and stuff. I mean, that's what I love about it. There's so much information here and entertainment as well. So I just adore it. And there's no question here. It's just really a testament of how great this stuff is and how much I enjoy the series.
Well, and we have to thank you, John, because I can't tell you how many people come up to us, particularly even here at New York Comic Con, that they first heard about Comba Comics here on Word Balloon. Oh, so we appreciate all the support that you've given us.
Wow, that's...
We get a lot.
That's awesome. And... you know, really enjoy the suffering of poor Jack Kirby in Combo Cox, who really is kind of the hero and the sympathetic center of this nexus of comic book history. Now, I know you guys have other things coming up, and I want to talk about those. And obviously, there's a lot going on in major works and independent works. So, Ryan, you handed me a card earlier. It was a bad guy.
MTV Comics, I guess, is a new thing that's going on, and I'm going to be writing and drawing a title for them called Bad Guy.
What's Bad Guy about?
Bad Guy is about a low-rent supervillain who is basically trying to get out of the business. It's sort of a noir thing. You know, just the more he tries to get out, the deeper he gets back in. And it's mostly played for... I mean, the lead character's straight, but it's mostly played for laughs. And anybody that liked the MODOK comic I did for Marvel a couple while back will definitely like this.
Oh, fantastic. Will it be coming out issue by issue? What's the format that'll be
in? The plan is it's going to be a three-issue series, and it's going to be coming out digitally.
Oh, very cool.
And later, will be in a print collection.
Okay, so will people be able to buy it, or will they be on the website?
They'll be able to, for purchase. We don't really have the details yet or exactly. Okay. But it should be, you know, mid-winter is when it's going to start, and it'll be monthly, three issues.
Outstanding. Freddie, I know you got a lot of Marvel things happening and everything. So, and I've heard, and I know I'm among the people that have really enjoyed Alpha Flight. You and Greg always work together well as writers and stuff, and it's always fun to read your stuff.
Thank you. We're really having a great time doing Alpha Flight. We're beginning the next four-issue arc. The fifth issue just came out. It involves Taskmaster, bank robberies, and the true secret behind the fascist government of Canada.
Very, very cool. And really, man, go through the litany because it's the end of my con weekend, so I'm like, hey, all right, what do you do? So yeah, help me out, and I'll be able to think of more questions and stuff. What else are you currently writing?
Well, Greg and I are wrapping up Herc.
I'm sorry that it did wrap up and everything, because enjoyed Street Level Hercules and everything.
It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun, but it just didn't, you know, catch on commercially, but not everything does, but that's okay, you know. I've got a big Marvel project they haven't announced yet, and other than that, I'm also concentrating a lot of creator-owned stuff, not really stuff I can talk about now, but definitely stretching those muscles, and you'll hear more about it very soon, I'm sure.
And a Van Letty Dunleavy creation is not only a wonderful trade, but also a stage production, Action Philosophers.
Yes, that's right. Adapted by my lovely wife, Crystal Skillman, an award-winning playwright, and it's done very well. It's the first run at the Comic Book Theater Festival in June, sold out, so it's been brought back for 2 weeks in Williamsburg, and it'll be over by the time folks hear this segment, but it was awesome, and you know, Sam French is coming tonight, so hopefully they'll publish it.
Awesome.
And so you're coming to a high school near you, the local theater production of Action Philosophers.
Yeah, for people who don't know, Samuel French is the publisher that produces theater scripts for high school productions and stuff, so that's great. And I'm trying to think if they have, like, I don't know what kind of distribution Samuel French has other than... I was thinking of, like, Powell's and places like that, but I don't know what bookstores. And it's so hard.
I mean, they're just a regular publisher, you know. I don't think Diamond carries them.
So. Exactly. I was going to say, you can't go to the catalog for it, unfortunately. But that's really cool. It'd be fun to, you know, grab a script copy of the play. So that's awesome, man.
And that means Ryan and I have more money for us. Royalties.
Outstanding. That's great.
I got a heroin habit.
Well, continue to success for both of you. I'm looking forward to Bad Guy then from MTV Comics, and it'll be very interesting to see how that plays. And good luck in the digital market with that, Ryan. I think that's awesome.
I'm pretty excited about it. It'll be interesting to see how it works out.
Fantastic. And I have enjoyed kind of glossing over the sixth issue of Comic Book Comics, but I am going to wait patiently for a couple of weeks, pick up my final issue, and then I'm going to go out and buy the trade because it's been just a great ride for these years and stuff.
Do you know about this?
No, I don't.
Oh, look at that.
Oh,
I see Comic Book Comics in a collected... that's right. If you want a recommendation for Comic Book Comics, Tony Isabella did this very awesome book called...
I wrote it.
A Thousand Comic Book Titles You Must Read, and Comic Book Comics is among those titles.
We just found out just now.
Yeah, and they're very excited to learn this as well, so we're all experiencing this moment together. Wow, True Story, swear to God, also in there, very cool. So, yeah, no, that's fantastic that Tony included you guys. That's, and I'm glad to have been here to experience
well,
it.
Tony is a fellow Clevelander, and I'm glad he's looking out for his Midwest homies.
So that's fantastic. And, again, really looking forward to the wrap-up of Comic Book Comics and everything else that's coming out from Fred Van Lente, Ryan Dunleavy. Thank you, boys, as always. Great to see you.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Thanks a lot.
Shane Davis here at Artist Alley at New York Comic Con. And Shane has been lighting up the bookstores with J. Michael Straczynski on Superman Earth 1. Good to see him.
Oh, good to see you.
Tell me about this. You know, they've got three different, obviously, parallel tracks going on with Superman. You've got Grand in Action, the regular book currently being written by George Perez, and then soon to be turned over to
Dan Juergens.
There you go, Dan Juergens and Keith Giffen, of course. You're working on book two now?
Yes.
And what can you tell us?
I'm 95 pages done. The main villain for the book will be Parasite, with a secret appearance from another Superman character, which is will be a secret. And not a lot I can talk about volume two. I mean, you know, we went in it like rethinking and retooling Parasite, you know, which was a lot of fun, you know. I definitely want him to be more than just a purple guy. So, I mean, but it's true. I mean, so he has different stages in the book, like he actually grows and morphs in the book and so on. So, you know. It's going to be a very interesting to see how people like it. There's three huge fight scenes with him, and they're all choreographed completely different, and ends up with Superman, the final battle is pretty brutal. So, you know, it's going to be totally a fun ride. Visually, it's a lot more action than Volume 1. I mean, physically, you're going to get a lot of cool, like, superhero battles. But, you know, like, we're doing it different ways. Like, they're fighting in the interstate or fighting in a crater that they built into the ground. Or, you know, I try to make these fight scenes a lot different than the stuff you see in normal comics. But it's also kind of weird because I have three fight scenes with the same two characters in one book. So it's kind of like I'm having to approach it more like a movie and the choreographing. That the fight scenes were like, oh yeah, remember when he threw this at that guy, or remember a time when they were fighting in the interstate, like, you know, like I wanted people to walk away, you know, like with the Matrix movies where like, oh, you remember the interstate chase, you know, I wanted people to label the fight scenes. So I went at it trying to make sure that they were all they stood out individually. It's not like, oh, here they go again, you know. Each fight scene, either Parasite's in a different physical state or Superman's having to change things up. So,
do you feel you have more breathing room, given that it is an original graphic novel, rather than episode? I mean, well, I guess the first volume was going to be released as, you know, 22 pages by 20, you know, chapter by chapter, right?
The first volume was an original graphic novel. It wasn't, it was always known it was that way, so... Number two is that way the same. The only difference between doing, like, periodicals is that when you do periodicals, you can refresh sooner. When you do, like, an original graphic novel, you can't, like, you know, if this was single issues, by the time I was to another issue, I wouldn't have to worry about repeating the same shot. You know, I could do the same splash page, a little different, but not. But I could feel free to go back to that same, hey, this is that shot. And the original graphic novel, I can't do that unless I do it for a story moment. Like if I want like a deja vu feeling, I actually have to approach every scene as its own new scene, which is becomes more of like, sometimes I really need to know what's ahead of me. To know, okay, well, no, I need to save that trick for that moment, you know, stuff like that. So,
okay. I know too that these books are coming out digitally as well as, you know, in real book form. And I was wondering, as an artist, something that I've noticed, and I've heard other podcasters mention this as well, double page spreads on an iPad almost have the opposite effect, because, you know, they kind of have to be reduced to be seen horizontally on the screen as a third of the actual screen size. And I was wondering if that's figuring into any of your mapping out any scenes or anything like that.
No, I actually have one spread in the whole book, and I did the spread that way. I did it on its side, so you actually have to stop and flip the book around.
Interesting.
But with that, it had to do with size and position, so it still would read well on a digital.
Exactly,
font.
That would be the opposite. Go on.
But I didn't think of digital when I was doing it. Okay. And I honestly, the thing with digital, and I respect people are trying to give it its own unique stamp and everything, but I never was one to do a lot of spreads unless the story called for it.
Sure.
And in the end of the day, like digital this, that, or whatnot, you know, I mean, people are going to zoom in on the iPad or whatever. You know, I mean, we can't really draw comic pages for digital devices. That, I mean, and I appreciate some people saying, oh, no, you got to think of this. And I mean, but it's kind of like those are just things that people are throwing at it to try to make it sound special. The reality is that would be like filming something for different size TV sets. You can't do it. I mean, everybody has different TVs, you know. Some people have the big screen, somebody has this, but they're all roughly the same proportion. I had a background in animation a little bit, some introduction classes. I never worked in animation, but I know enough about animation that, you know, when they're doing they have pencil tests or something, they you know, their image area is roughly the proximity in proportion to a TV screen, the rectangle on its side. So, you know, I mean, it's the same with comics. I don't think, like, a layout's going to read the same on digital. I mean, I understand the spread thing. I do. But, I mean, yeah, we're going to lose that, but does that mean that you're not going to draw a spread if the story moment is irrelevant? And that's, like, in my case, I did two spreads in Volume 2. Or Volume 1. And one of them was a big shot of Tyrell knocking Superman through two buildings and him kicking back and coming back at Tyrell. And, I mean, that was a story moment. I needed the horizontal movement. I mean, I don't do... Some artists will just do spreads to have a nice big shot of Wolverine.
Sure.
And that's great, but in the graphic novel, I'm only doing it when I need it for... I wouldn't do it any different, because my job, whether it's on digital, whether it's in comic format, is just to draw the story the best way possible. I mean, I find it very weird. Everybody's like, you know, they're trying to put these little charismas in the digital. The digital, in the end, is really the same. The main difference between digital, to me, is it's accessible, and the reality is the charm in it, the real charm, nobody really talks about, is lights passing through the screen, so the colors look better because there's light passing through, and they're like, it's prettier.
Absolutely.
You know, because the light, you know, it's not printed.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, that's it. Until they start moving comics, which some people have tried. I did a cinematic for the DCU online game for Etrigan, and it had some movement, and I drew it in separate layers and everything. But then that's animation, that's not comics.
Understood.
You know, it's flash animation, it's animation. So comics are comics. It's a panel, it reads. I know they have this reader that takes you from panel to panel, but if a comic artist does his job right, that's irrelevant. Somebody's going to read left to right, up to down, unless a comic artist just doesn't know how to make the eye go that way anyways. It's irrelevant. But there are people trying to throw a lot of charms at digital. And, I mean, I'm not disqualifying them. I'm just saying, like, just set the record straight. I don't see it making a big difference. If you're telling the page right, if you're telling the story right, it's all the same.
That's outstanding, man. No, I really do. I appreciate the depth that you went into that, because I think that is a question that people are asking and wondering about.
Well, you know, it's like, you know, when TV came out, people were speculating it'll rot your brain, it'll this. And, you know, I mean, comics at one time, it was speculated, oh, it'll make your kid, like, want to rob a bank or something, you know, or jump off a roof
right.
with a towel tied around his neck. So, I mean, it's you know, people always want to label things and speculate on things and... You know, and there's some people that want to say, oh, digital's better because of this. And, I mean, there's a lot of people that want digital to be better. And for profit reasons, I'm not going to go into who and say names. But, I mean, obviously, you know, digital's, you know, I think it's an outlet for new audiences. And I'm happy it's there. But I don't want to slip my own wrist because of it, you
Understood.
Know? So
absolutely. You know. So how many pages will the finished book be? Would it be 128 or
we're not exactly sure. Like I have a 106 page or 110 page finished script, but I think we're trying to figure out, like, is there some ways to fluff that out a little bit more. But I'm pretty sure. I mean, I'm 95 pages done. I'm gonna be, unless there's some things force majeures out of my control and they would have to pull in another artist for some reason, I'm pretty sure I'll be done in the next couple of months.
Fantastic. That's great, man. Have you done a lot of bookstore? I mean, certainly this is a bookstore property as well as a comic store property. Have you done a lot of bookstore touring and signings? And
not like real bookstores. I've done comic shops.
Sure.
I've done some comic book signings only because, like, I am a big supporter of the comic bookstores. I definitely wanted to do more book signings, but I've just been busy with cons. I mean, honestly, I've had like 6 cons the last year on top of drawing 95 pages of Superman Volume 2, and I'm right now coming on to Superboy cover, so I've just been so busy. I would like to do more bookstores, but it's not like the bookstores actually, I think a lot of people go and ask them, and then they're like, oh yeah, come in for a signing, but unfortunately, I never did that. I probably should have done that, though, in hindsight.
Well, it's always Volume 2. That's all right.
Oh, yeah.
I'm glad to hear that you are doing covers. This is great of what you guys are doing. But obviously, I wonder sometimes, because I've asked this of questions of people like Scotty Young, who's busy with the Oz books for Marvel, and I wonder when you're on a book assignment like this, as opposed to a monthly, do you like the change up, or do you miss being...
No, I do like the change up. Actually, I prefer working on a type of periodical thing rather than a graphic novel. I mean, I liked doing Volume 1. I knew it was a graphic novel. Going into 2, though, I felt like I should have been on the project and been on the shelf more after 2, or I mean after 1, and then, you know, 2, I honestly am not sure how I felt about that. Like, I'm not sure that's exactly, doing back-to-back original graphic novels isn't something I really desire. Nothing against it. It's just, it's just math, you know. That's if those were periodicals, you know, those 2 books could have been, you know, 6 comic books.
Absolutely.
You know, and I personally would have preferred that, you know. I mean, I'm good at, I like doing the graphic novel. I like the idea of saying I did it once. Doing it twice, doing it anymore, I'm kind of like, you know. So we'll just, you know, leave it at that. I think I've been off the shelf enough. And, there are a lot of people that have a big interest in getting me back on the shelf and a lot of options there. So it'd be fun to see how things gel out.
That's great to hear, man. Honestly, continued success, and I really do wish the best for you guys on Volume 2, but it would be nice to see you back on the monthlies as well.
Yeah. I mean, I can't keep up a monthly schedule, mind you, but I can come in and do 7 issues a year, you know, put me on, you know, something, you know, rotate me out with another guy,
yeah,
you know.
I mean, run, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of miss that, you know. I mean, it's a lonely road on the OGNs, because you do a lot of work, but you never get any fan response for such a long time. And it's good that I get good fan response, but, you know, it's like I'm running at 2 different times than everybody else. Everybody's loving me for Volume 1, and it's great. Same time, I'm like, dude, yeah, you should see this stuff in Volume 2. I mean, that's so beyond me. And I'm an artist that always hates my past work. So being, like, where I'm at right this moment, I'm doing some of the best artwork I've ever done.
Terrific.
But I'm living in my past, which I can do better than. And it's a very miserable place to be, only because I always try to strive to be better than my past work. So it's almost like I'm just living in the past, you know, even though I'm not. It's kind of hard to look at it from my perspective, because anybody else, you know, a lot of people don't even know there is a Volume 2, you know. And I don't think we even officially showed any artwork to the panel today at DC, Superman panel. So, you know.
Good response from the panel, obviously, when they show the art.
A response. About half the panel seemed to be about Earth 1. So, you know, and it's great that there's people that just love Earth 1, and I'm happy for them, you know, and I'm happy the book's successful, and I wish it all the luck.
Well, and I'll tell you, man, one thing I thought you really nailed on Volume 1 was Lois has never been more beautiful, truly. I really like how you drew Lois Lane.
Yeah, I wanted a spunky, she's a mix between Jennifer Carpenter and some ex-girlfriends. So my wife, you know, she kind of has that look about her. And I like that kinetic energy between, you know, I don't know. I have a thing for brunettes, so, and strong women. So I really want to carry an attitude in her. So, you know.
That's cool. Well, you know, honestly, I always feel, as much as everybody likes the big fight scenes, I really think the hidden strength of the Superman series is Clark Kent and the supporting characters, and you got to make those character moments as important as the action moments.
Well, that was the thing with Volume 1. With Volume 1, you know, I looked at him like, what am I going to do with, you know, I see his origin story so many times, and that's when I'm like, you know what? What do I bring to the table? And then sooner it became, you know what? I'm bringing the table. I'm going to bring the table. And then I come back to 2, and I'm like, oh, boy, how do I follow this? This was a one time. I'm blowing it all out. I don't ever have to do it again. And then, oh, you got to do it again. It's like, oh, you know, fuck. So I'm like, okay, so now what am I going to bring to the table I set up? And I saw two things in Superman. I saw adventure, and I saw romance, okay? And I said, okay, you know what I got to do? I'm going to swap out, you know, romance for sex. I'm going to swap out adventure for violence. Now, it's PG-13,
yes.
Okay? But I'm pushing that envelope on the violence and the sexual tension. When I say sex, I mean sexual tension. And, you know, JMS is really delivering on the script, and I'm hoping that it registers well with people. And what people saw today had some violent scenes, and the cover, which is very violent, or morbid, not violent. It's a tragic scene, and people's response was great. You know, and I don't think it's like, oh, that's what Superman needs. It's not even that. I'm just putting reality into it. You know, I mean, there's things Superman could do that we hope he never does, and I just had to illustrate that, and that's it. We'll see how people like it when they actually have the book.
That's great, man. Well, we look forward to Volume 2. You've got a line waiting for you, so I'm not going to keep you. But I appreciate your time and your candor, as always, man. So, Shane Davis, keep kicking ass, and we'll talk when the book's ready.
And taking names, and taking names.
Absolutely taking names. So thanks, man. Thanks for your time.
All right. Thank you.
It's a tale of two Toms right now. It's writer Tom King, it's artist Tom Fowler, and it's good to see you guys here on the floor at New York. I had to think for a second where the hell I was. New York? Yeah, that's right. All right, good deal. So, you guys have a big project coming up for Simon & Schuster?
Yeah, it's actually a novel that has to do with Superman. It's a literary novel. It's going to be marketed to a literary audience.
As opposed to us knuckleheads.
As opposed to myself as a knucklehead.
It has a couple of pictures, so...
Yeah, I know. It has actual words you have to read. You can't just skim through.
It's going to be like Recess.
That's cool. tell us about the story.
It's called A Once Crowded Sky. It's a fairly simple concept. It's a world of superheroes who lost their powers, except for the one guy who was too cowardly to show up. So the one guy who didn't show, the one coward who didn't show up, make the sort of sacrifice to give up his powers, is now the only superhero left.
Oh, wow. Very cool. And I'm sure all original characters, but ciphers of some familiar tropes of the superhero world. I don't want to get any litigation problems for you, Tom. You understand.
Yes, of course, there are archetypes, you know, like any sort of things. You know, there's Superman-esque characters and Robin-esque characters and Captain American-esque.
See, if you put the E-S-Q-U-E on there, then it's no longer, you know, so you're okay.
Well, the part of it, too, is that all of the, you know, the actual comic book world, you know, of us reading comics and things like that, like an issue of Superman or an issue of Action Comics is in the book. So there's a character who's literally is a superhero based himself on a superhero.
That's outstanding.
So it gets around the copyright that way.
Very cool.
That's fair use right there.
Now this is coming out in the spring?
It'll be coming out in the spring, yeah. We're doing, it's going to be a big print. The first 2,000 come out in April, and then it'll be like a big release in all the bookstores, assuming there are any bookstores left.
Understood.
Sure. Yes.
So, but hopefully a digital version of it as
well. Yes, it'll hit the Kindle, it'll hit the iPad, it'll be Aperture, and Tom Fowler is doing the cover.
Yep, awesome.
I'm doing the cover and 15 interior pages that are more or less the comic book, like the actual comic book versions of these characters in their adventures in previous lives kind of thing.
Very cool. Yeah. You know, I always do love reading short stories and novels, you know. I mean, I'm starting to blank now on some of the ones from the last couple of years that have been so good as far as titles. But novels, you know, superhero novels and things like that, superhero genre stories. I think that's fantastic, man. That's excellent. How'd you find Fowler?
If Chang couldn't do it.
No, it's a much better story than that.
I like
that.
That's a good flashcard way of doing that. I like that. Go on.
I had Cliff Chang, Fanboy 101, you know, he's a fantastic artist.
He's excellent.
And he said, what do you want this to look like? And I sent him a sample art. I said, I want it to look like this. This is what it looks like. And he had to pull out because, you know, he blew up and became like the face of 52.
Understood.
And he said, well, why don't you just hire the artist you wanted me to be like instead of me being... And it was a Fowler piece of art.
What was the specific art?
I don't want to give it away because it's the cover, right?
Oh, all right. There you go. All right.
Was it a cover image?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Okay, very cool. Excellent.
People have seen it, though.
Oh, very interesting. Right. Yeah. I like that.
So when the book comes out, they'll see the cover and go like, wait a minute. Do I know that?
That's fantastic, man. And Fowler, you had a nice little run on the Venom.
Yep.
Helping Tony Moore out and Rick Remender, so that's cool. Yep.
Helping Tony out.
No, you know what I mean.
No, everything.
Tony and I joke about it.
But I'm
sorry that your contribution is wrapping up.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, there was never any, like, Rick and I talked about going on further, but there was never any, like, Marvel had never really said, like, oh, yeah, you're totally going to do more. We just kind of let ourselves believe that there would be more.
Okay.
But we had a blast doing it. I loved, like, every second of it. Yeah. We got to bully in a bunch of stuff that was weird and kooky, that were like the Venom dog and stuff like that. Because that was all me. That was something I bullied in. I pitched it. It was a five-word pitch that I sent to Rick. And as soon as I sent it, I went on Twitter. I was like, I've just pitched the greatest moments in comic book history. And I just kind of kept that up. But no, and that was a blast to do. We got to do the thing in 20 pages in an issue of Venom. You know, like that was a lot of fun.
Not Ben Grimm, the thing.
No. John Carpenter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So, Hudson Hawk. So that was a blast. And just as that was ending, Tom came a knocking.
Outstanding.
And so I've got that's taking up my time for, you know, this month. And as soon as that's done, I've got another project with Marvel, which I certainly haven't been keeping a secret, but I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about it. So
those are my favorite kind of interviews.
Yeah, it's
something cool coming. I can't tell you about it.
But it's with Fred Van Lente.
Awesome.
And I'll say this: Fred wrote an incredibly weird pitch that I took and made much bigger and much weirder.
Awesome.
And Marvel said yes to everything.
Excellent.
And the notes that we've gotten, it'll give away because we got two really great notes, and one of them was like more of the origin. And this will totally give it away. And the other note was, can you add a giant green irradiated monkey?
Do the math, kids.
Yeah, those are the kind of notes I like to get from editorial.
Attaboy. Yeah. That's fantastic.
Giant green irradiated monkey. That's my middle name. So
you keep working with my favorite writers, and Tom, I look forward to you.
Yeah, I'm working with my favorite writers.
Right now.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Let me just say what a big fan I am of your show. I've listened to it for years, and you're the best. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're kind, man. Honestly, when it's closer to the book, come back on and we'll do a full blown thing.
Absolutely, I appreciate it.
That'd be excellent, man.
When are you having Pasco back?
That's like the running joke for like the last Mark White jam me on that the last couple episodes.
I can hear a little bit less from Bendis, a little bit more from Pasco.
As we're recording this, I have a meeting with Marty tomorrow, and
awesome.
I can't wait to hear what he's got cooking. So.
All those episodes are gold.
Oh, that's awesome, man. No, I love these guys. Honestly, comic book history. I was just talking to Alex Saviak and I'm blanking right now. Jesus Christ. Paul Kupperberg.
Yeah.
And exactly. So, no, those are my guys. You know?
And there's something else that I'm doing kind of on the side that actually, in a weird kind of roundabout way, you're somewhat responsible for. Because when you did an interview with Scott Aukerman from Comedy Bang Bang.
Yes, I love those guys. Comedy Death Ray, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, it's Bang Bang now.
They changed the name? I didn't know.
It was a little while after the interview. I already knew about Paul F. Tompkins at the time, but I started listening to him more as a result of Comedy Bang Bang.
Awesome.
And as a result of listening to the Paul F. Tompcast, I started listening to a little show called The Thrilling Adventure Hour, which is the great, you will love it, which is the greatest thing in the world.
Is that with the Red Panda or whatever?
No, okay, no. It's a bunch of guys, including Ben Acker and Ben Blacker are writers. Right now they work for Supernatural.
Okay.
And they did this stage show for years that was in called the Thrilling Adventure Hour. That was, they got a bunch of people like Paul F. Tompkins, Patrick Brewster, John DiMaggio, a bunch of guys.
Like comic geniuses.
And they're all fantastic. And they would put on...
like a radio play?
Yeah, old school radio plays, but, you know, funny.
Sure.
And so now what they're doing is they have a podcast of it.
Oh, that's great.
And they're
great.
Just, like, polishing all the old things.
Oh, fantastic.
And bring them out. And every week they hit again. And the stuff is amazing.
Oh, that's very fun.
And I went on Twitter... one day and said, like, because I was just like, I went through like a season's worth of it.
Okay.
And said something along the lines of, man, I wish it was a Thrilling Adventure Hour comic, because
I
would draw that. And then Blacker got back to me right away and said, like, you want to do a poster?
That's
so I'm doing like a theater poster for him in a little while. Yeah.
Oh, very cool, man.
For the thing that Paul F. Tompkins and Patrick Brewster do.
That's really
cool. I mean, again, like, it's not for any money. It's just because I'm a huge fan.
Oh,
but it's just a fun thing to do. It's a weird, like, the weird connections that
find,
you know.
No, but honestly, that's kind of what I like about this era.
Yeah.
Where, like, all of us that do our little things, and forgive me for putting me alongside you guys, who are creating real content.
We
all get together and do these kind of jam things.
And the weird thing about, like, going and listening to, like, Earwolf and stuff like that, which Comedy Bang Bang is now a part of, is you start to realize, like, all these guys do each other's podcasts, and, like, there's a community of, like, former, like, they still call themselves underground comedy, but really, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But
when you're clearing six-figure checks every day,
I'm not sure they are, but
let's say healthy.
Yeah, I wouldn't say underground anymore. That's where I'm capping it. But at any rate, it's very like that comedy scene, that scene in the improv and the comedy scene in LA is very like this scene.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
And it's like you start to see those same kind of connections of people just like getting together and wanting to work together and doing neat stuff. Which is the same thing that happens here all the time, you know.
It's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk to Ackerman.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and it's because he had Gail Simone on one of his shows.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. No, that's really cool.
And they're
cool,
all nerds, you know. Like,
yes,
you know,
yes.
Chris Hardwick is around here somewhere, you know.
Yeah, that's true. Very cool, man. Awesome. That's really cool, man. Very, very nice. I like it.
When I assumed you were doing something inspired by John, I think it was a Principal Suntress spinoff.
Yeah.
I was getting super excited.
No. Although one of these days I will put together the Naked Podcast.
Attaboy.
Which will be an hour with me naked.
I like it. Well, look, you'll have a place on the Word Balloon Network if you're
naked
interested.
Naked interviews. The Naked Truth.
I like it.
The Naked Me.
Well, that's great. Good luck with the book. Good luck with your secret projects and the poster you got coming up.
Secret.
Exactly.
We're doing bunny ears right now. Secret.
Again,
the secret.
Do the math.
They're incredibly secret.
You know what we're talking about. But no, that's awesome, guys. Toms, thank you very much. And,
thank you.
And we will, let's reconvene in the spring, and we'll do another one when the book
comes
out.
Thank you, sir.
And maybe, you know, maybe have me on the show sometime.
Fowler, you're
all... No, that's fine. No. Yeah, whatever you want. Yeah.
Well,
when they make the real announcement and people don't have to do the math, then yeah, that's a good time to have
Absolutely.
You on too. No, I've been meaning to have you on for a long time.
Okay.
Follow, you know that.
Sure.
No.
Right. Yeah. Whatever you say.
It's true. Thanks, boys.
I'll talk to you later. Bye.
It's been a long time since I've had Brent Schoon over on the podcast. Early Word Balloon listeners might remember Astronaut Dad, and it's not that Brent hasn't been busy since. But very happy this summer at San Diego to learn about Mr. Murder is Dead, this great book that he did with Victor, and I'm forgetting Victor's last name.
Victor Kinaj.
And if you love, as I do, Dick Tracy, you can see the influences there. It's a great crime story. I'll let Brent finish the pitch, but it really is one of my favorite books of the year.
Well, yeah, thanks, John. Mr. Murder is Dead is essentially the story of a guy named Gold Kane who is in the twilight of his detective career. Throughout history, we kind of see flashbacks from like the 1930s and 1950s that are kind of told through Golden Age comic strips. But the current storyline is him in his 70s, and his arch nemesis, Mr. Murder, has just died. And so what we find is we're trying to figure out how Mr. Murder and who killed Mr. Murder. And through all that, Gold Kane kind of digs deep back into his detective life and career. And he kind of finds some of his old rogues gallery that are still around, too. And it's just kind of like this, we take this, you know, wonderful world of 1950s comic strips and we kind of flip it over and we see the ugly underbelly of what has become of it as they get older. And it's just been a really fun project to, like, you know, play with, different art styles. Like, you know, golden comic strips from the 1930s and 1950s look completely different. And, you know, and just kind of, you know, kind of just zeroing in on that and try to look at, you know, properly representing those images in a way in the book and make them feel, you know, like they were an original comic strip from that era.
That's awesome, man. You know, I enjoyed your style in Astronaut Dad, and also you finished Astronaut Dad.
We did. We've got actually the collected edition of Astronaut Dad for the first time here at New York Comic Con. We had the second volume has been done for a couple years, but we unfortunately lost our publisher. Was no longer there, so we kind of had to wait for a few years for things to kind of clear up with legal things. But now we've got it, and we're really happy with it. I think it turned out great, and now people can finally get the complete story. I know we did volume one, but for us, we thought the best way to re-represent Astronaut Dad was just a complete collected edition. So
that's smart. And yeah, it's a great story about the space program in its early days. And another interesting period.
Our pitch for it is it's the Wonder Years meets the Right Stuff.
There you go. Absolutely. Yeah. A little October Sky feel in there
Absolutely.
As well.
Yeah, that's a good one, too. I'm going to add that in on my pitch. So I'll give you a nickel.
There you go. Exactly. That's about what it's worth. That's good. I like that.
We've always been proud of the book, and it's been sitting there forever. And we've been really, I mean, me and David have wanted this thing out for everybody because it was really well received at the time when we brought it out in 2008. So, you know, to be here now, it's really nice. And it's going to be available right away on iBooks and Kindle and everything. So, I mean, astronautdad.com if you're interested in getting it, and amazon.com where you can get the books.
Excellent. And Mr. Murder through Archaea Publishing. And what I love about Mr. Murder, as you say, your art style is evocative of the 30s and 50s, but you've got a great rubber style. Your modern stuff is different, and it really shows your diversity as an artist.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. I mean, I've been really blessed to have, like, friends that I've worked on projects like David Hopkins and Brandon Terrell on horror with it years ago.
Absolutely.
But this was like, you know, Archaea came to me a couple years ago at C2E2, and my editor, Paul Morrissey, I worked with him on some Toy Story covers for Boom, and he was over at Archaea, and he happened to come by my table, and he was like, look, we got this project. We kind of want to dip Dick Tracy type character influence on it, and I just so happened to have a sketchbook where I had like three or four Dick Tracy drawings in there. So I just gave it to him.
Like
and
this?
Yeah. And like, here you go. And so he took it over to Archaea booth, and Stephen Christie came back over, and he was really jazzed about it. And I just went back home, and you know, they gave me a couple of key points on the book and drew some character designs, and we were off and running. So it was it's amazing how it turned out, and I had a great relationship with Victor throughout. We hadn't met until San Diego this year.
We talked
on the phone a lot, and we really hit it off well. But then at San Diego, we finally got to meet each other, and it was like my brother from another mother that I never met. We really hit it off well, and we had a great signing in Brooklyn last night, and tonight we are doing a signing the Saturday night of the of New York Comic Con. Zachary Quinto, who's got an association with the book, is coming and helping us out and, you know, drawing some fans to a bookstore, and we're going to have a great signing.
That's excellent, man. You know, it is, and I must say, first and foremost, it's an amazing comic,
graphic novel.
Zach's obviously participation. I wonder if there is a feature film or some sort of plan beyond the comic book.
Well, the thing about this was first and foremost, what I loved is they're like, it's got to be a good book, and if that's all it's ever going to be, that's all we, you know, it's at least it's a good book.
Sure, you guys delivered, obviously.
Yeah, how it works is his company, Before the Door Productions, when, you know, he started it a couple years ago after Star Trek and everything like that, and, you know, it's great because he's got all of his friends, his talented friends, and they all have different, avenues they want to go through, and Victor, I went to college with, he's always wanted to do a comic book, and so, you know, with his association, They worked a deal with Archaea, which is a great company on top of everything.
Absolutely.
And so it has this celebrity association, which some people I don't want to touch that. But no, this is it's a great comic book by great comic book creators and a great comic book publisher. So.
That's awesome, man. And Archaea is a great publisher. And I love about them is all their books are so diverse. There really is something for every taste.
Really, I was so proud when we went to San Diego. I'd gotten one copy of the book before I left, and I was really happy. But to go out, and I had a copy of the book with us first night of San Diego, and we were having dinner with some really amazing creators that I love, and they're just passing around that book, and everybody's like, man, I got to do a book with Archaea, so I have something this pretty in my portfolio, and you know, that makes you feel good. It makes you feel really good. So,
well, attaboy, enjoy the victory lap because you deserve it. Mr. Murder is Dead is fantastic.
I will.
Anything coming up on the horizon that you can talk about?
I've got a few things. I'm double feature, Tim Seeley, Mike Norton, all those guys. I'm behind on something I'm working on Phil Hester with, but it's a really fun project with that. So when I get back home, I need to bust my butt and get that done because it's been due for a while, I got to be honest. But I'm looking forward to that, and then I got a few things, but nothing major yet. So I'm kind of, like every artist here at C2E2, we're hustling.
About a year or two ago, you did a book with Blue Water, one of the Vincent Price books.
I did.
And was that collected? Or
They printed it and everything. It was really fun. I got to write it, which was awesome.
Which film was it that it was based on?
It wasn't based on anything. It was actually it was I loved Vincent Price as the old radio, and so it was his likeness, and he plays a character who is the star of like a Benny and Betty radio drama comedy. Okay. And unfortunately the ratings are down, so they want to add a new love interest, and Benny and Betty in real life are really a couple who are struggling with their relationship. So as things are going bad on the radio show, so are in their real life. And it's got a very classic Tales from the Crypt type twist, and it doesn't go so well for Benny or Betty, I've got some copies here. I'm going to give you one when we're done talking.
Awesome,
it was one of those things that kind of came out, not every book, everything kind of quietly goes into bookstores, but for me, it was a great opportunity just to try my chops at writing something, and it was a huge fun to do, and I had a great collaboration with an inker named Stacy Ponder, who I got to meet through that, and she also helped me on Mr. Murder is Dead, she's been a great, find for me to help, I like inking my own stuff, but when, some certain projects have a little tight timeline,
sure,
it's always nice to have somebody you can go to.
Yeah, who you can trust, absolutely.
Absolutely. So, and she's running around here. I'm hoping to meet her at some point. But,
oh, very cool, man. Well, keep it up. We share a lot of the same interests and stuff, and I'm always happy to see you and talk old movies and old radio and
old
stuff.
Old radio, like, especially.
But no, absolutely. Mr. Murder is Dead from Arkea. Look for it. It's an excellent book. And you people know how much I love crime books and stuff. A perfect example of this is from Brent Schoonell.
Jeff Loeb wrote a wonderful introduction for Mr. Murder is Dead. It's great, and I didn't meet Jeff until San Diego.
Oh, good.
So for him to give the praise that he gave us, and this was really nice.
That's
and
awesome.
So yeah, it was amazing. So yeah.
Very cool. Well, thanks for your time, and looking forward to the next project.
Thanks, John.
All right, here's two good brothers that are doing great art and making good comics. It's Matt and John Rossetti, and they are self-published, but in the case of John's doing a lot of animation storyboard stuff too, but what touched me was they handed me this book like 3 years ago or something like that at a show. They're like, hey man, we like Word Balloon here, we like this book. And it's this really sweet thing called Growing Up Comics, and any comic fan can relate to this book. I think it's excellent. Matt drew it. And Matt, you were just telling me how John contributed to the book as well.
Right. What I did was all the artwork, and I was never one for writing scripts. So I did all the artwork in a storyboard kind of fashion, sort of the old school Marvel style. And I wrote for myself the script after writing all the panels. And I said, this is what I'm going to give to my letterer to do. But first I wanted to bounce it off my brother, who's my twin brother, and he's one of the characters in the story. It's based off of both of us as children, which is the theme of a growing up comic. So I gave him all the artwork, and then he wrote his own script, and he put a lot of jokes and gags in there that just cracked me up. So at the end of the day, I ended up using what was a mix of both of our scripts, the best of each of ours.
That's awesome.
Yep. Essentially, my goal when working on the script was to make my character look really awesome and to make him look like a joke.
Of course. There you go. Sounds like two brothers. That's awesome, man. Yep. No, honestly, what I love about it, too, is that any kid that grew up with superheroes can relate to this. You guys tie towels on your backs and everything. Those are your capes. And it really is. It's a really nice story, and it is exactly what it says. It's growing up comic, and that's wonderful. Now, it's self-published from Daydream Comics. How do they get this, man?
Well, right now, it's not really available, but I'm going to make it available very soon.
Good.
On the website for
Please
sale
do.
Through
right, the,
through one of the print-on-demand services like Kablam
good.
Or something like that.
And would it be at daydreamscomics.com?
Daydreamcomics.com. They can read the entire PDF
Excellent.
At the website right now. The print-on-demand services like Kablam
good.
Or something like that.
And would it be at daydreamscomics.com?
Daydreamcomics.com. They can read the entire PDF
Excellent.
At the website right now.
Wonderful.
And they can read comic strips, sort of the weekly comic strip style, webcomic style, on the website also, and see my other artwork there.
Very cool, John.
Yeah, a lot of really delightful full-color comic strips there. The book is black and white, so it's a little something different from the book. So the characters kind of exist in two ways.
Very cool. And John, I know, well, first I want to ask you about your work on the Venture Brothers and stuff. You did a little storyboarding for them?
Yeah, I worked for them for a good 6 years or so on three seasons of storyboards for the first three seasons, just about every episode. Absolutely loved it, I was in a department called Storyboard Revision, where we had one round of storyboarding, then the creator, Jackson Public, would look over it, make notes, basically scrap the entire thing, give it to a team of three guys, and say you got 2 weeks to reboard the entire episode. So we killed ourselves, but we did it each and every episode.
You were showing me your scrapbook, and you got a lot of great stuff in there, the Monarch and all the various characters.
Yeah, I really get a kick out of doing the character acting, working off the voice acting, and really trying to push the poses and everything, and just make it as funny as possible.
Are you, obviously, eventually you want to get some animation going of your own, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, my first love is comic books, and okay. I have my own character and stuff you got in your hand there called The Fool. And, you know, I really would like to get an ongoing comic with that going as well. But I've always thought of the character in an animation sense and would love to translate it to that someday as well.
Tell me about The Fool, because it has this great kind of alien kind of look to him. But what's the backstory on The Fool?
Sure. The Fool is, it's a long ways off from being ready. But right. Essentially the story is about, basically it is sort of an alien character who is the first of his kind to develop free will. And he wanders out of his world and into ours, much to the chagrin of his creator, who comes looking for him.
Okay.
And it's very much a kind of stranger in a strange land, except the strange land is Earth. And
which is a strange land.
Which is
true.
So, you know, through his eyes, we sort of see many of these strange social aspects of our society.
What is anything available right now from you in terms of comic stuff or anything? What do you got going on?
Not at the moment. I'm working on a few pitches.
Okay.
Nothing I want to talk about too much until we really get it picked up. But
okay.
Doing a fantasy book now, which should be pretty exciting.
Awesome, man. And, we'll go to daydreamscomics.com and check out Matt's stuff.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. If your listeners send me an email at mattrosetti.com, the book is $9.99.
Okay.
And I'll mail them a copy if they really want one. I've got about 50 left.
Is the email mattrosetti@gmail.com?
mattrosetti@gmail.com.
Okay, you heard it there. mattrosetti@gmail.com. I swear to God, these guys put it in my hands. I don't know what compelled me to read it, because I get a lot of books sometimes, and immediately it melted my cold, cynical heart. And I'm like, oh, that's really nice. It is just this delightful, very funny story about two brothers growing up, and I swear any comic reader can relate to this. So go to daydreamcomics.com, check out the PDF, take Matt up on his offer. It is so worth $9.99. Very funny stuff. And looking forward to The Fool and whatever you got coming up as well, John. So Matt and John Rossetti, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks, John.
All right, on the floor here at New York Comic Con, and happy to be speaking with Dave Elliott. Dave is editing Benaroya Publishing, but also has several other comics coming out from Image. Of course, the Benaroya books as well are coming out from Image. But Dave has a long history at places like Tundra and Radical, and has been behind a lot of really fun books. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Oh, thanks, Joe.
Well, tell me about The Vault. Obviously, a great success with the miniseries.
Yeah.
Got a lot of nice reviews and favoritism. And I guess before we started taping, you say Johnny Depp's company is interested in doing something with the property.
Yeah, well, Johnny Depp and the producer Graham King have bought the rights to The Vault. They're already in active development now with it. They're talking to screenplay writers. We should be seeing a first draft of the screenplay before the end of the year. And, you know, hopefully late spring, early summer, we can go into production. And just so you know as well, it's like the first three issues. The third issue is just about to come out. We've got the exclusive third issue here at the show. It's also the tip of the iceberg with it. It's like Sam Sakar, who's the creator of it. We worked together at Radical. We did Caliber. We actually managed to do it with the same artist. So the same artist of Caliber and The Vault is Gary Gastoni from Imaginary Friend Studios. It's something that Sam really wants to do more of, because it's really just the introduction to the world that we've been developing.
It was interesting seeing some of the artists that you had both in your Radical projects and things like The Vault. When you mentioned Gary, it seems like you were coming to these artists from a talent pool that maybe comics hadn't tapped before. At least, you know, these are guys that I certainly hadn't heard of. And, again, it's that American blinder sometimes. So tell me about some of these international artists that you've come up with.
Well, I mean, Imaginary Friend Studios, we literally just announced Radical as a company. And Stanley Lau, who's the president of Imaginary Friends, came to the booth and we met, and he showed me his portfolio, and frankly, my jaw dropped. I showed Barry, and I was like, look at this guy, at these guys. And it was like, you know, there was like 30 artists, and they're all varied styles. But it was just, you know, amazing. And they're concept designers as well. They do video game design, they do film design, toy design. So that's why so many of our books were, like, so unique, is they were actually doing these fantastic designs. We'd do these great portfolios with Hercules, which was kind of the Hercules and Calibre as our first two books.
Yes.
We were really fortunate in I know Richard Taylor from Weta Workshop. I'd worked previously on two other projects with him, and so that I knew that, you know, one of the things when you're developing a project is it's always best if you can find the people you know who are most passionate about a certain subject. And so you always get the best work when you go to someone who you know has been dying to do something like that. So with Richard, I went to Weta Workshop and was like, Richard, this is Hercules. And he's like, I was like, wow, do you want to do, you know, and I gave him the treatment that was by Steve Moore. And he loved it. So it was like, they had a blast. They did a fantastic job. And I think that really pays off in a project when you've got people who really love and believe in it. Steve Moore, it's a passion project for him. So we did the same with Calibre. And again, it was like the Imaginary Friends Studios guys, because there was 30 guys in the studio, they just reached out to the guys in the studio that wanted to do this type of material. That's why all our books look so great, because they could reach into the different genres because they had a love for it.
Recently you put together an issue of Heavy Metal.
That was me really being able to give the guys in the studio the chance to actually write their own stories, draw their own stories, do what they wanted. And Kevin Eastman was just really sort of like, it was a blast. One of the great things was, because it was timed for, it was the September issue of Heavy Metal, but it came out for San Diego. Now, at the same time, DeviantArt had stepped in this year in San Diego and had sponsored Artist Alley.
Yes, I remember.
Yeah, they finally, the artists had carpet underneath their feet instead of the cold floor.
I hear you.
They had, instead of those hard plastic chairs to sit on all week, they actually had soft padded chairs with soft padded backs. And they put in these huge, big, widescreen displays hanging from the ceiling with their artwork up, like rotating around. So, and I know the guys at DeviantArt, so I pitched them the idea of, hey, all the Imaginary Studio guys are on DeviantArt. So I said, look, because it's really an all DeviantArt issue, would you guys be doing, we've got this idea to do an exclusive cover. How about you guys just cover the costs of the exclusive cover? And so what they did is they did that. So we've got like Fella, who's the icon from DeviantArt, he's on the cover. Stanley Lau is actually, he's probably one of the most highest ranked artists on DeviantArt. He's had something like 70 million page views. So it was like a really good match. And so so we did a really big promotion of it. You know, Stanley was there, Kai, Lim, Sonny Go, Kendrick. They were all there signing. And so every time we did a signing, Kevin said, look, let's just give it away while they're signing. So we gave away about like 8,000 copies of that issue of Heavy Metal at San Diego. And it was a great success. It was like everyone loved it. It was a blast.
That's excellent. Now, one of my favorite of the Benaroy books is Marksman.
Right.
And I've really been enjoying the story. It's a great series. It's a cool a post-apocalyptic thing, but again, before we were recording, as you explained it, it's not your typical end result of a post-apocalyptic situation. It is kind of grounded, based on today's reality in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I think what makes a good project is you know if you can add an element of believability to something to start with, you can actually build upon that and do something extraordinary. If you start off that way, it always seems false. You're trying to hook someone in, with something that's too unbelievable. With Marksman, it's set 60 years from now, and it's what we're facing right now. Instead of like, the, you know, it's an apocalypse created not by aliens, or it's not by zombies, it's not nuclear warfare. It is the economic recession. It's a global meltdown. America's just come to a grinding halt. The moment that happened, every city, every state that had its own, any sort of resources, like Texas with any sort of oil, believe me, they just barricaded the state up. Anyone that tried coming into the state, they shot, they killed. So they didn't want them coming in. It's like, this is ours, you're not having it. And so it's kind of 60 years after that, after a civil war, and everything's kind of settled down a bit. We've lost 70% of the population. And the story is focused in San Diego, New San Diego, where, you know, all the big solar power initiatives are. You've got the triad of the military forces there. You know, you've got the Marines there, you've got the Navy there, you've got the Air Force there. And so if you've got the military and the top scientists, yeah, they've created a ring around the city by demolishing skyscrapers and hotels, and they've got their little pocket, that little corner there. They're getting solar power, they're getting power from, you've got like these military, you've got aircraft carriers, you've got nuclear submarines, all they're siphoning power off for their city. So 60 years from now, they're still using iPads. They've got iPhones. They've not been able to create new technology, but they've kept the existing stuff.
They can sustain the old stuff.
Yeah. So you've got these like missions where a military mission might actually be going like, okay, there's half a dozen of you going out in like two states away. We've located, there's a Best Buy that no one's ransacked yet. We're going to get a bunch of iPads and stuff like that because we're running out of bits and pieces, and they bring it back. And that's, you know, and of course along the way there's, you know, there's kind of sort of like there's cannibals and there's groups out there who are like roaming, you know, mugging people, and it's, you know, like little Mad Max, not on the, not the too extreme side of it, but there's a little bit there. And so you've got this period where it kind of feels like it's settled down, but like anything, you know, once things settle down, people start looking into neighbors. And you know, I mentioned Texas earlier. Well, Texas with the oil has decided, hey, we hear that San Diego has some solar power, and that sounds interesting. And they've got all those, like, they've got the military weapons and stuff there. Let's go and get it. It's kind of like Texas invades San Diego.
My nightmare come true.
See, we did a lot of thinking about the world,
sure,
even the technology, because we've been looking at even like the current advances in technology now, how we can play that into with like the you know, we use like a lot of the military drones that the military have been using now. We've been using those to great effects in marksmen. So I think that, you know, we've tried, you know, the military guys themselves, they're treated within the city as entertainment. They're the marksmen are like a football team. So people root for individuals. They all have their outfits, but they're allowed to like customize. They've color-coded themselves. Some of them have put little decals on, you know, customize it a little bit just to give themselves, you know, so that when they're out there and they've all got cameras on, people, it's entertainment. It's like, wow, I hear they're in a fight with some cannibals. Yeah, let's watch this. It's streaming into the city. They can actually see it as entertainment.
You're crossing a lot of different genres and putting them together. We were talking to someone that just came by to purchase something, and we're mentioning how Caliber, in a lot of ways, is the King Arthur story as a Western, for example. So,
yeah, I mean, that was what was so fascinating about it. I mean, instead of the sword, it's a gun. And it's a gun that only one man can fire. And it fires basically this lightning force, which in turn, our Arthur has to learn to use that gun in certain ways, because when he first uses it, it's very like a buckshot. It literally blows someone to pieces. He later learns that by control, he can actually learn to control it more. He can actually shoot through somebody. There's actually a scene towards the end where somebody's actually holding this girl hostage, and he fires directly at the girl, and the girl thinks, oh no, I'm going to be killed. And then, of course, she opens her eyes, she's still fine, but the guy who's been holding her, his entire middle has just been blown out. So it's like, you know, because he can control it, as in, I don't want to shoot you, so you don't get hurt.
That's awesome. Yeah. Now, you mentioned, too, you've got some projects coming up that, you know, obviously books aren't here yet, but there are things in the works. Tell us about a few of those.
Yeah, I mean, we're just announcing here at the show, we've got our post, we've been giving away a poster here that's, we've got two projects with Michael Benaroya for next year is Redeemer, which is, it's a supernatural western. It's about a priest who's murdered, and he comes back and for revenge. But it's a, you know, it's a lot more complicated than that, because he can only get his revenge a certain way, and he has to figure that out. The kind of a little piece about the backstory is, let's just say, and let's just imagining this, let's just say that if there was a god and there was the devil, and supposing they once had a deal where they said, you know, the devil said to God, hey, guess what, you think your guys are so pure, I bet you I can corrupt anyone. And God, thinking that he was like, no, you can't. So the devil goes like, oh, I bet you. All right, I bet you I can. And God takes that bet. So what the devil does is he puts, shall we say, like a chess game, puts a piece in play where this demon, his job is to forever walk the earth corrupting people. And, you know, he finds these towns that are really nice, everything's fine, and his job is to corrupt it and destroy it.
And how about the other project you mentioned?
Yeah, the other one's a book, it's called Blood Merchant.
Oh, okay.
It's a vampire story, but it's taking that idea that, like, imagine it's like it's the Godfather with vampires. And the Blood Merchant, our core character, is he's a human, he's not a vampire. He survives on the peripheries of the vampires. The vampires, the majority of the vampires, they've sworn an oath not to harm people, but of course they have to get blood from somewhere.
Right.
So the Blood Merchant is exactly what he sounds like. He goes around and he finds blood. And, you know, they'd love to know where he gets it from, but he's not going to tell it, because obviously that's where he makes his living from, and he knows they go around him. And, you know, he's, you know, and it's got to be clean. It's got to be pure. So it's about his story and his relationship with the head, you know, the head of the crime families, the biggest one, and how that relationship comes undone. And he's been set up by one of the other members because he's a favorite. Even though he's human, he's a favorite of the crime lord. So they're trying to push him out. And so they frame him. And so it's his story about how he uncovers all this, how he deals with this, and his final place within that community.
Very cool, man.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I think they're very distinctive books. I think, you know, they literally, the artists that you get, I think, create very evocative covers that I think are very enticing. I know that was the case for me, both on The Vault and in Marksman's case. So they suck you in, and I think you deliver inside, too.
Oh, thanks. Cheers, John. I treat every project individually. I try to make every project look individual. You know, and again, it's like, you know, before we talked, I said the best way to get the best out of an artist is to give him something to do that he feels passionate about. And that's not just artists, that's with writers as well. And that's the best way to get the best work. So I go for artists that I know would kill for certain projects. So just going, you know, when I mentioned Hercules, I went to Steve Moore, who, you know, he's a great historian. He's one of the people I used to joke that if I gave you a cell phone with Steve Moore on the other end of it and put you in the British Museum, he could direct you around and could actually give you a guided tour from his house. It's like he's, you know, he just knows what, it's like, because he does a lot of research. He actually still does actually a lot of research for Alan Moore. So it was someone like that who cared deeply about what he does. And I knew that giving him something like Hercules, he'd give me something really, really cool. You know, we actually set out with Hercules not to do something that was, you know, comic-y. We wanted to make it grounded. I said to him, I'd like it to be almost like the Hulk TV show, where, remember, it was like he wasn't the Hulk all the time. He wasn't throwing things around all the time. It was just certain moments. And that's what Steve did. Steve gave us those moments where it was, yes, for the most part, you're not quite sure. Is this really the Son of God? It's like, you know, there's even that moment of like, I thought you'd be taller. but, you know, when it's called upon, you really, oh, yes, you're the you are Hercules.
It's the reason why you're wearing that lion's head on you.
Yeah. But what was cool, what Steve did was, which I thought was really made it grounded. He said, well, look, I'm going to treat this as though, you know, when someone does, when I remember, like, there was the great Jesus of Nazareth TV series many years ago. When you make a TV show of something like Jesus, you're not going to hire an actor to play God. You're not going to have these conversations with Jesus talking to God, because it's not there. And at the time, no one ever saw God. No one ever saw this. So, but people would tell stories. So what we did in Hercules is, it's all full of stories. It's like when you see the gods, when you see anything they've done, like the Hydra or anything, it's not actually as part of the story. We only ever see it as somebody's vision of it, as they're telling two people a story. Or I heard that so-and-so and so-and-so. And then we cut to a visual of it.
Sure.
But it's their idea of their imagining of that moment, not a true. So there's nothing physical to say. We don't ever see any of the gods. We don't see the Hydra. It's a very human, emotional story.
What's going on for your projects in terms of digital?
Well, we've got all our image books are digital.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, digital has a very important role to play in comics right now. But I think that I think a lot of probably what I'd say, a lot of retailers would get angry with me. They'd probably disagree with me about a lot of things, but I think that digital is a great selling tool. In just the first 2 hours of this morning, we sold 7 full sets of our comics, just based on the fact that they come by and read just the first issue of Red Spike on the iPad.
Okay.
Now, that's all they'd read, one issue which we gave away for free, and they came here and bought a full set of all our book sets. They bought Red Spike, they bought Samurai's Brother, they bought Marksman. So, you know, and that's 7 people in the first 2 hours of today. So I'm all for digital, but that's how I think digital is going to play. And that's how I'm treating it.
To sample it and get people in the store.
Yeah, it's a good way of getting people to know things up front. So I'm all for giving away the first issue, you know, before we've even solicited the first issue.
Job hazard. Tell me about Red Spike and Samurai's play.
Well, Red Spike is, again, we've like cloaked it. You know, it's like it's nice to actually do things where you put somebody one thing, thinking that it's one thing, and then we want to switch and show you it's like, it's not what you think it's going to be. So it was, you know, yes, it's like, you know, particularly in the year that Captain America comes out, it's like when I say, well, it's about super soldiers, it's like they're going like, oh God, how many people have done that? I mean, one of the things we've done is if you read the first arc of Red Spike, which is the first 5 issues, you will notice that we have no Red Skull. We have no, you know, Osama bin Laden. It's all about the conflict within not just the project Red Spike itself, but those in politics who are seeking control of that organization. And the action is derived from actually when the process that creates the Red Spikes soldiers, of the 20 soldiers that start out, only 2 survive the process. And one of those is, he's a little bit uncontrollable, so they try to actually control him by putting this implant in, and it goes completely horribly wrong. He goes completely off the other end. And so, you know, 2 friends have to fight each other to, you know, but that's the foreground, but the background is this other conflict that's going on a very political level.
Awesome. That's fantastic.
And Samurai's Blood.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a period. It's a period Japanese epic. Owen Wiseman he's loved this type of material since he was at college. I mean, it's just like this is him doing something that was, it's like a dream come true. I mean, this is what I mean. It's like you find the people that like, oh, it's like they don't have to go away and research it. He's got it all in his head already. He, you know, it's like he loves this material. So to get someone like that to do this, and it's about a clan that is completely wiped out. It's like they're betrayed, and across the country, every single member of this clan is wiped out, all except the the son and daughter of the head of the clan, and the son of the blacksmith who makes the swords for their clan.
Okay.
And it's about these three kids, and about how they, you know, they, it's coming of age. I mean, they're like, you know, teenagers. And now all of a sudden, it's like they have to go out into the world and plot and plan their revenge. And so they grow up, you know, they grow up very fast. So the six issues, it is a you know, it's a betrayal and a revenge saga, but it's really a coming of age of these, what the three people are willing to and have to go through to do that, and the sacrifices they have to make along the way.
That's awesome, man. I think you're picking some really interesting genres, and it's good to see that kind of alternative out there, and I think that's a good role for you guys to kind of slip in, because, and again, before we were recording, I know you talked about you like superhero stories, but there's plenty of those, and it's nice to see these genres get attention. And I also think that as the digital market opens itself to more people and stuff like that, I think it's only going to help you guys.
Well, I think it's because ultimately, see, to me, I think of it as, you know, everything I treat is basically a superhero story. It's like James Bond is a superhero.
Sure.
He is somebody who does extraordinary things to do something which he believes is right. And, you know, Indiana Jones is a superhero. Now, you might say, like, well, that's a period story.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you know, oh, that's a genre, that's not superheroes. But now everybody's falling, they'd fall over themselves to do an Indiana Jones comic. So it's, you know, it's like everyone is a superhero.
Yeah, I could see that. No, again, you know, it's good adventure fiction.
Yeah, it is exactly that way.
Excellent, man. Well, continued success. I think this is great. The Benaroy books are really cool, and I like the non-Benaroy Image books as well. So looking forward to the wrap up to the vault, and really, like I said, I love Marksman. I think Marksman's really exciting, and Baxter and company are doing a really good job for you. So David Elliott, keep it up, and I'd be happy to talk to you down the road and talk to you about some of the new books as well.
Oh, brilliant. Thanks, John.
So there you go. That was our New York Comic Con coverage. I hope you liked it. Today's episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find what you're looking for, whether it's a trade paperback, a hardcover, an original graphic novel, omnibuses, essentials, all at greatly reduced prices from the standard retail price. And don't forget, every order of $50 or more at InStockTrades.com, you'll receive free shipping. It's a great value. You're going to find your favorite artists and writers waiting for you at InStockTrades.com. John Sutcher saying thanks again for listening. Don't forget, you can find Word Balloon every week here at iFanboy, and of course at wordballoon.com. Make sure you check out our archive of an extensive collection of interviews with great writers and artists. Questions or comments about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Hit the talk back either at iFanboy or, of course, at my page at wordballoon.com. You can follow me on Facebook under my name, John Suntress, at Twitter under John Word Balloon, and happy to talk to you about whatever you want to talk about. Until next time, thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2011.